This year's presidential nominees bear the dubious distinction of being the most unpopular choices running in decades. I'll bet you've heard about negative feelings about Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, but today we're going to talk to people who feel great about our candidates. We start with Donald Trump and Southern Illinois resident Gail Henson. She says he's made her more excited than any candidate in decades.
He is hopefully our answer to building our country back, building our military back, making us more secure.
We're also joined by Latinas for Trump and others. Later, Illinois produces more pumpkins than any other state.
We generally plant enough pumpkin that we have a cushion that would carry us into the next year.
That's a Libby spokesman speaking to NPR last year. We talked to Libby's, which gets most of its canned pumpkin from Illinois, a Savoy pumpkin farmer, and a plant scientist about this year's crop. That's all this hour on the 21st. Stay tuned. Thanks for tuning in to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. This election year, we're watching an unprecedented race between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Unprecedented for many reasons, but also because most voters have doubts about whether either candidate would make a good president, according to the latest Pew Research polls. Another focus group in Wisconsin last week, when asked to name a scent or smell that best describes a 26 campaign, used terms like sulfur, rotten eggs, garbage, or manure. That is true. I am not making that up. The small group was evenly divided between Clinton, Trump, and undecided voters. This week, we thought we would hear from Illinois voters who do have positive things to say about the candidates. We start today with a conversation about Donald Trump speaking to his supporters. Tomorrow, we'll be doing the same for Hillary Clinton. Later in the week, we'll be talking to analysts who will help us understand the demographics behind people who are supporting Trump and Clinton. We're joined by Gail Henson first. She's a resident of Iuka. It's about 90 miles due east of St. Louis in downstate Illinois. She has voted in more than a decade, but this year she says Trump has brought her back into the process, and she's here to tell us why. Gail, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
I understand over the course of your career, you've been a lifelong Democrat. Why change your vote this year?
Well, unlike every American citizen, you know, we watch the news, we see the upheaval in finances, jobs, the terrorists, and I just really felt the duty to listen and see if there's someone that could really address those issues, okay? When I started hearing Donald Trump, he was hitting on every issue I have a problem with. And he just really resonated, you know, with everything that is wrong here now. So,
yeah, what issues? I wonder, what issues did he particularly resonate with you on?
Military, jobs. I've lost three jobs in my life. I'm 58. And I've lost three jobs due to them going out of this country. And not only that, you know, the law and order issue, you know, I am a big supporter of our law and order in our police and firemen and all that. And I'm in the immigration. And the biggie is he's not a politician. You know, he's not like Hillary Clinton. He's not in someone's back pocket. No one's paying him off, you know. So all those issues just pretty much won me over.
Mm-hmm. Gail, can I ask, can I ask who you voted for in the last presidential campaign? Do you mind sharing that?
Well, I haven't voted in the last 8 years.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, because they wouldn't address those issues. You know, they wouldn't put themselves out there where, you know, they were going to make some definite changes. And Donald Trump wants to make those changes. You know, that, I mean, my whole family are Democrats. You know, they are. I mean, my dad was a really hardcore Democrat. And, you know, today I think even he would vote for Donald Trump. And that says a tremendous amount right there.
Well, Gail, I wanted to start because you mentioned a couple of issues. So I thought maybe we could go through them because the first one was the economic one, right? And it seems like you talked about the jobs, losing three different jobs because those companies went overseas. How do you think, Donald, do you think that by voting for Donald Trump, do you think that he'll be able to bring jobs back to this country?
Yes, I do. I really do. I'll tell you why. He has a really good reputation for building, you know, from starting from nothing and building. And he has a lot of connections, you know, with people that build. I think that he understands a lot of what the everyday American here is going through. I'm just on the outskirts, a few miles from Salem, Illinois. And back in 2001, we lost a huge factory here. It was Quebecor or World Color Press originally. And 999 people lost their jobs. That's a big number here. And it devastated this area. And it hurt me financially. I moved because of it. And I just recently moved back here to this area this past 5 years. I'm a grandmother now. And I worry about the future for my grandchildren. You know, this is why I mean, if I have to walk to the poll, I will, you know, to put my vote in. Well, I've been waiting for someone like him to come along, you know, wanting to do a change.
We've talked about the jobs. Where else do you think the country has been in decline?
Oh, I don't even know where to start on that one. A lot of our factory jobs, you know, our manufacturing jobs, have ceased from this country. Granted, a lot through this area where I live is farming. You know, we are a big farming community, but there are a lot of families that were providing for the families through manufacturing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now...
No, do you think those jobs been gone in the past 8 years, or was that prior?
It started back in Clinton.
It really did.
So it started
with President Clinton.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's just declined ever since.
So that would be, about 15 years ago would be when you would really,
Yep. And, you know, I even voted for Clinton. I'll admit it. I did. And I just so regret it, you know, but he put on a good facade and got people to think, you know, that he's going to dig us out and he's going to make everything better. And it just, I mean... you can see.
So would you say, and would you say, Gail, around that time, maybe 15 years ago, was that when you started to lose faith with the Democratic Party?
Yep, sure was. And, you know, I'm not the only one that feels that way. A lot of the people, I mean, 5 people in my family alone worked at World Color Press.
Wow.
All of us lost mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, it was bad. So, I mean, I've just been kind of sitting back waiting to see, you know, if we could get a candidate in there that would truly see what's going on and really want to make a change. And I can't say enough about Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he is hopefully our answer, you know, to building our country back, building our military back, making us more secure. I hope he stands steadfast, you know, and doesn't let anybody talk him down or try to get him to back off of his issues. I mean, if he does, he may lose my vote.
Well, and it's interesting you say that. Well, it's interesting you say that, Gail, because we talked about immigration and it seems, frankly, that it's not really clear what Donald Trump's stance is on immigration now. I know he has a big speech that's expected on Wednesday, but last week he said a couple conflicting things, right? Because last week he said, first he said, you know, there was the wall, and then he said there was a little, then he was maybe kind of walking back from that a little, and then then he said again on Anderson Cooper. On CNN, he said, no, I do believe. And so it's really, at this point, I'm not sure we have enough details on that. But from what you've heard of what he has said, what's the most important thing to you that he do in terms of immigration? What do you think he should do?
One, don't let any of those refugees into this country. because you're letting in possibly terrorists, okay? Two, stop the immigration. Stop people from coming in here illegally until we know if they're good or bad. What President Obama has done here recently is just unbelievable. Unbelievable. He has handed money over to the Iranians, and he's letting the terrorists out of Gitmo. Come on.
So you didn't vote. You haven't voted for 8 years. Did you in the previous election? Did you vote for who? Did you vote for George Bush, or did you vote for Al Gore? I'm trying to go back.
Yeah, I am too.
Yeah, it would have been Bush.
I don't even think I voted for that one.
Yeah, so you didn't vote in that election either. So do you remember the last election you voted in? Was it for Bill Clinton?
Yep, it sure was. And after he did what he did and everything started falling apart, I just quit voting.
Right.
And then now this is the first time I have actually, I'm excited to vote. I mean, I really am. I'm excited about it. I can't wait to cast my vote.
Are you trying to convince your family and friends? Are you getting other people to vote for Donald Trump too?
I already did. I convinced my aunt and uncle. They were Democrats, and they're in their 70s, but I'll tell you what, even they are enthusiastic to vote for Donald Trump. Now that says a lot. And I've got a couple of other family members, they've switched over. So, he's pretty much hit the Henson family. He's made his voice prominent in my family. So I think he has a good chance. I really do.
Well, Gail, thank you for sharing us. Thank you for explaining to us why you're voting for Donald Trump. That's Gail Henson, a resident of Iuka in Marion County in southern Illinois. Thanks, Gail.
Thank you.
We're talking about people who support Donald Trump. We're talking to people who support Donald Trump. Tomorrow, we're going to be doing the same for Hillary Clinton supporters. If you're a supporter of Donald Trump, you can join our conversation, explain why. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. You can tweet to 21st Show, 21st Show. It's conversations we're having all weeks about politics here on the 21st. We're joined now by two additional supporters of Donald Trump. On the line with us from Chicago, Doug Eibendahl is a lawyer. He's editor-in-chief of Republican Newswatch. Hey, Doug, welcome to the 21st.
Thank you so much for having me.
Here with me in studio is Maria Vasquez. She's a resident of Urbana, and she's the head of Latinas for Trump Illinois. Maria, thanks for being here as well.
Good morning, Nyla.
Doug, I wanted to start with you. We were just talking to Gail. We just heard from her, a Democrat most of her life, although hasn't been voted for decades. As she said, Clinton was the last presidential election she participated in. Now she's really excited about Donald Trump. Would you say she's typical of what you're seeing among Trump supporters in Illinois, people who haven't been engaged in the electoral process or the voting process, suddenly excited and back in it?
Absolutely. Well, I have to say, Gail Henson, a very hard act to follow. She was wonderful. Yes, this is what Donald Trump is doing. This is why he, is the biggest vote getter now in Republican Party history, even with 16 other people in the race. He is growing this party like no one has since Ronald Reagan. And, it's Gail Henson, not having, said she hasn't voted for 8 or 10 years.
Longer, actually, because she said Clinton. So I think that, what is that, 15?
Long time ago. Yeah. But my point is, of people like her are not getting a call from a pollster because she's not, in the system. She's not considered a likely voter, a regular voter. So there is a lot of, I really take these polls with a grain of salt because Donald Trump has so changed the playing field in politics this year that he's bringing in people who've never been involved like Gail, and there are a lot of other people like her around the country, including in Illinois, absolutely.
Maria, you're a newly appointed leader for Latinas for Trump Illinois. In fact, your title is Chief Latina for Trump Illinois. Is
that's
that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
How did you get involved with this?
Actually, my involvement became very random and casual. I have never been involved in politics in the past. Lately, I have been more involved because, like Gail said, you know, and Doug, there are more people that are getting more excited about, you know, a newcomer in the political arena, like Trump, that is not a politician, coming in out of particularly nowhere and, you know, stirring things up, you know, in politics. And, you know, that got me excited because, you know, here we have a business owner that is close to the people, that is close to, you know, the day-to-day running of a business that wants to make, you know, our economy better. And that's what we need. We need a stronger economy. We need a stronger country. And I believe that he is close to the people. I believe that, you know, he gets a lot of backlash because he identifies himself as Republican. And, you know, he has a big mouth. And I think, you know, he's like a lot of the people that are excited about voting at this election is, you know, he has a big heart and he has a big mouth and he's very outspoken. And, you know, I like that.
Is that the, for you, is, you like that he's outspoken. What are the issues that are most important to you? Gail said jobs and the economy and security. What would you say? Could you give me your top two issues that are most important for you that you think the president needs to handle?
Jobs and immigration. Like I said, when I got more interested in politics, it was because of social media. I saw a group on social media, Latinas for Trump, and that intrigued me because, you know, that seems like, oh, you know, there's more Latinas out there that are, you know, supporting Trump like me. And, you know, that was great. And so, you know, I started reading on it. One day, casually, I actually just went downtown with some friends.
And so we're going to pick this up in just in a second. We've got to take a break, but we're going to finish the story in just a minute. You're listening to The 21st. Stay tuned. Thanks for tuning in to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We're talking politics today, tomorrow, and Thursday on The 21st with an eye to national politics and the presidential election. We've been talking about polls. We've been talking about sentiment about Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. We know that there's been an unprecedented level of negative feelings about the candidates. So we thought we would talk to people who feel very good about the candidates. Today, we're talking to Donald Trump supporters. Tomorrow, we'll be speaking with Hillary Clinton supporters. On Thursday, we're going to be talking to analysts who are going to analyze and put into context all the demographics behind the people who are supporting either presidential candidate. If you're a supporter of Donald Trump, what are you hearing from him that appeals to you? Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. Again, that's 1-800-222-9455. You can tweet to 21st Show. My guests in studio with me, Urbana resident Maria Vasquez. She's the head of Latinas for Trump Illinois. On the line with us from Chicago, Doug Eibendahl is the editor-in-chief of Republican Newswatch. Maria, just before the break, you were telling us about how you got involved with Latinas for Trump. You were saying you saw a Facebook page that you went on.
I saw a Facebook page. Yes, that is correct. And we went out downtown with a couple of friends. At the time, I wore a Trump shirt, T-shirt. And around downtown, there was a lot of people. I was getting a lot of attention for being Latina and wearing a Trump shirt. So I was getting a lot of pictures
taken.
Was this
in Champaign or Urbana?
Champaign, downtown okay. Champaign. And one of my friends took a picture, posted it on social media, on Facebook. And the group Latinas for Trump actually reached out to me and said, hey, you know, you're a Trump supporter. Can I talk to you? And she ended up calling me and we had conversations and she invited me to be Chief Latina for Trump in Illinois. And since then, I've been reaching out to the Latino community to educate them more on Trump's message and really get the message across that I feel sometimes the media distorts to them.
You said, you know, when we're looking at polls on average, and Doug, I know you've had a little skepticism about the polls, but on average, according to a few polls we looked at, about 20% of registered Hispanic voters support Trump. That ranges from about 18 to 23%. I wonder, Maria, what you're seeing among various Latino communities, what you're hearing from people in central Illinois. Are you getting a lot of traction with your Latinos for Trump Illinois? What part of the state is it coming from?
I'm mostly focused on central Illinois. I would actually love to do more work overall in Illinois once, you know, the election is coming to a close. And I've been working with the, you know, community, because a lot of the Latinos do have a voice, but I've learned that they're not registered voters. So the important thing is to get them registered and get them to the polls to vote.
Obviously, Donald Trump has made immigration a really important part of his platform. I imagine you've gotten pushback from people who may have a hard time understanding how you would support a candidate who said that Mexican immigrants are bringing drugs and they're rapists and they're bringing crime, you know, and that's something that a lot of people have found particularly offensive among the Latino community. Have you had pushback from other people, from other Mexican Americans or other people? What have people said to you about supporting Donald Trump?
Well, they hear that and they hear, you know, a wall and they immediately get scared, you know, and I don't feel that the wall is something to be scared about. I think we should.
Is that something you support?
I do, because, you know, it's going to bring security to the U.S. And I don't feel that, you know, if he's saying let's build a wall, it's saying, you know, let's keep Mexicans out. No, we need to keep everyone that isn't has the legal right to be here because, you know, that's where the terrorists are coming in. It's easier to come through the border of Mexico. So, you know, we need more security in the States. And he's not really saying anything different than what Rudy Giuliani said back in 9/11. You know, he was saying the same message, but yet he was seen as a hero because at that time we were all seen as Americans. And now there's, you know, a division starting to form because Trump is saying it. And my job is to convey to the Latin community that they don't have to be scared of this. It's going to bring more security and it's going to bring the immigration to a platform to where it needs to be changed. There needs to be a structure.
Doug, I want to bring you into the conversation. Yeah. I mean, as we've been talking about, I know tomorrow Donald Trump is expected to provide some more detail on immigration. What would you like him to say?
Well, first and foremost, I think what he's going to say is that job one is securing the border, and he is serious about the wall. He's made that a central thesis of his campaign. And by the way, everyone forgets, especially the media that I think is, you know, clearly likes Hillary Clinton in this election. But everyone forgets that there was a major piece of federal legislation that was signed into law in 2006 that was signed by both then-Senators Clinton and Barack Obama in 2006, which provided the funding for a doubled wall fence 700 miles along the Mexican-American border. Okay, so both Hillary and Barack Obama have supported a border barrier. So this idea that Trump is talking about something outrageous is just not true. But we're going to secure the border, and then number one is making sure that getting rid of the criminals who are here. You know, let's be clear. Donald Trump said that some illegal immigrants are committing crimes. That is true. That is absolutely true. There's all sort of evidence on that. But this idea that he has said that all immigrants or all Mexicans are criminals is just nonsense.
Doug, let me ask you about, there's when we think about Illinois politicians, there's certainly been Illinois politicians who either said very little about Donald Trump, and I'm thinking about Illinois Republicans, or they've been critical and gone so far as to say they won't vote for him. And I'm thinking of Adam Kinzinger in particular, his comments that he made after Donald Trump's comments he made about the federal judge that was overseeing a case about the defunct Trump University, saying that the judge was of Mexican heritage. That's when Adam Kinzinger said immediately after that he could not support Donald Trump. I want to ask you, Senator Kirk, Representative Bob Dole, three of those in particular have been very public about their stance about not supporting Donald Trump. Republicans from Illinois. Do you think that will hurt Donald Trump?
No, it only helps them. It only helps Donald Trump.
In what way?
The narrative. Because all those people you've mentioned are all failed, do-nothing politicians. They're all talk, no action. And let's face it, there's a lot of jealousy there. Those guys have been sitting around getting a government paycheck for years and years and years. They've done nothing. They've set by our American veterans are, you know, are begging for help. They're dying every day. The government isn't doing its job. These guys have done nothing. And they are so afraid that Donald Trump is going to come in there and fix things and is going to show them as the petty little men that they are. And that's exactly what's going to happen. So,
Doug, let me ask you, all across the country this week on different NPR stations, we've been talking about America's place in the world. And I wanted to ask both of you, Doug, I'll start with you. And then, Maria, I'd love for you to weigh in. How much of a priority is it for you that our next president be as focused on international affairs and America's place in the world versus our domestic needs internally as a country?
Well, they're both very important, but this is a competence election, and that's the main reason why I support Donald Trump, because he has a decades-long record of proven competence, of building, bringing people together to get things done. Look at where we are now internationally. The Middle East is a disaster. It is ablaze because of the incompetence and corruption of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. They do not know what they're doing. Hillary Clinton is somebody. She's been wrong.
So, Doug, I'm going to stop you there just because I want to focus more on particularly with Donald Trump, what you think he's going to bring. And Maria, can I ask you that, your question about Donald Trump and how important is it for you to think that our next president be focused on America's place in the world versus our domestic needs? Do you agree with Doug with what he's saying, that it has to be both?
Absolutely. It has to be both. I mean, we cannot portray an image that we're strong and not actually be a strong nation. And I think that Trump is the guy to do it. He's the person to do it. And he executes,
My last question for both of you. We started this whole conversation talking about how most people, when we're looking at polls, there's sort of unprecedented levels of people who feel really negative about this campaign. They don't really have confidence in either candidate. And given that, what would you like to see happen? What do you think needs to happen to get more people out? Are you worried that people are so negative that they won't come out to vote?
Well, I believe that people that are being negative, that's who the media is focusing on. I have not gotten a lot of negativity when I'm a Trump supporter. If anything, I do get a lot of people from the Latin community and from the Black community reach out to me and say, hey, you know what? I'm a Trump supporter. I'm just not that vocal about it.
So they just don't want to say publicly that they are.
Absolutely, because they do get a lot of backlash. I've gotten, backlash publicly since, my newspaper article came out. And, I'm a strong person and I can hold my own and that's okay. But others aren't. But, what it counts is that they go to the polls and they actually vote.
Doug, given the polls showing these record levels of negative feelings, what do you think needs to change in terms of the candidates or the tone to get voters to the polls?
My quick final advice to everyone is to decide for yourself. Don't just take the sound bites and the where the media who hates Trump take something out of context and twist it. Don't rely on that. Decide for yourself. Do a Google search of Right Side Broadcasting. It's a YouTube channel that live streams every single Trump rally. Watch an entire rally, an entire speech by Donald Trump, and then decide for yourself. And what you're going to realize is that the liberal media in this country has been lying to you for the past year about Donald Trump. They are Hillary Clinton and a lot of her media enablers are terrified.
So what you're saying, Doug, is you want people to watch Donald Trump in entirety for themselves.
Watch Donald Trump and don't take this dishonest reporting that Hillary's lapdogs are trying to spoon feed you. Decide
All right.
Yourself.
So I don't think that's a whole other conversation we could have later, Doug, right? But Doug is the editor-in-chief of Republican News Watch. He's also a lawyer on the line with us from Chicago. Maria Vasquez is with Latinos for Trump Illinois, based in Urbana. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. We'll be right back.
Beginning January 1st of this year, pumpkin pie became Illinois' state pie. That proclamation highlighted Illinois' place in the pumpkin hierarchy because year after year, Illinois produces more pumpkins than any other state. In fact, according to the USDA, we produced almost 750 million pounds of pumpkin in 2014. To put that in perspective, that's almost three times more than California, who is second to us in pumpkin production. Like any crop, those numbers can be affected in any given year by bad weather. Last year, heavy rains throughout the summer and fall cut Illinois' pumpkin crop in half compared to the year before. As the pumpkin harvest season approaches, we thought we'd check in on the crop from three different perspectives. In studio with me is Mohammed Babadoust. He's a plant pathology professor at the University of Illinois. Thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
On the line from Savoy, just south of Champaign, is Aaron Graham. He's the office manager for Curtis Orchid and Pumpkin Patch. They have about 18 to 22 acres of pumpkin there. Hi, Aaron.
Hi.
And Evan Lundy's with us. He's a spokesman for Nestle. Nestle owns Libby's Pumpkin. Libby's corporate headquarters are in Chicago. There's a large processing plant in Morton just outside of Peoria. Libby's produces an estimated 80% of the canned pumpkin in the U.S. And Evan's on the line with us from Cleveland. Hi, Evan. Welcome to the 21st.
Hi. Thanks so much.
Aaron, I wanted to start with you. What's this time of year like for you guys at Curtis Orchid and or Orchard and Pumpkin Patch? What's going on?
Well, if we're talking about pumpkins, we are in the final stages of gearing up for opening. We are opening our patch in mid-September, so this is kind of the last hurrah in keeping an eye on pests and any sort of things that might be detrimental to our crop, and also planning with our local network of growers as far as what we can estimate our needs will be beyond what we can grow.
Okay. Well, how does the crop look for this year so far?
It looks great. It looks wonderful. Especially, you mentioned last year, we haven't had the problems that we had last year. This year, we've had rain when we need it, and we've had dry when we need it. And so, overall, right now, we're on target for, I would say, a record crop.
Oh, that's great. Is your business mostly people coming to buy, well, to pick and then buy pumpkins? Is that what you guys kind of focus on?
Yes, entirely.
Evan, what's this time of year like for you all at Libby's and the plant at Morton? Is this also the time of year where you all are gearing up to get ready to be bringing pumpkin in?
Yeah, actually, we started up our facilities at the end of July, so that's a good thing for us. Fortunately, we did get some pretty good weather to be able to get started a little earlier than we have in the past. So we are up and running 24 hours a day, and hope to do so through early November if the weather cooperates for us.
How big is the facility in Morton?
It's quite large. I don't have the exact square footage, but it is a quite large facility, and we just use that facility to run our Libby's pumpkin during the pumpkin season, and then we get ready for the following year.
Okay. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Aaron and Evan and Mohammed and talk a little bit more about pumpkins, about the pumpkin forecast, about what happened last year as well. And it looks like good news for this year. Again, you're listening to The 21st. Stay tuned. Illinois is the nation's top pumpkin producer. We're talking about that, providing a little context to the pumpkin crop this year with Aaron Graham, who's the office manager for Curtis Orchard and Pumpkin Patch in Savoy. Evan Lundy with Libby's is on the line with us from Cleveland. In studio with me is Professor Mohammed Babadoust. He teaches plant pathology at the University of Illinois. Evan, we were just talking about, you said that if your facility in Morton's, the Morton facility, which produces, as you guys produce, a huge amount of the canned pumpkin market in the U.S. You guys, so the pumpkin that's in the can that you would buy on the shelf for Thanksgiving, is that this year's pumpkin? Is that how that normally works?
Well, actually, we tend to have enough from one pack to the following year's pack. To be able to carry over. But unfortunately, due to last year's shortage, obviously everybody's aware of what happened last year with pumpkin crops. And so this year, what consumers are going to get is predominantly going to be coming out of this year's pack. So because we just got up and going at the end of July, we expect to be shipping into customers actually in the next week. So consumers will start to see more Libby's Pumpkin on the shelf in the coming 1 to 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. I've always been curious about that. Do you particularly stock for the fall? Because I notice it's always harder to find canned pumpkin on shelves in, say, like the spring or later on in the year.
Yeah, I mean, we obviously have it year-round, assuming that we get a good crop. We always plan to have it year-round, and we continue to educate consumers on how they can use pumpkin, Libby's in particular, throughout the year in a lot of great meal ideas and recipes, aside from just what we're famous for, which is the Libby's Famous Pumpkin Pie.
Aaron, Evan was just mentioning last year. Can you fill us in a little bit about what made last year such a difficult crop?
Well, I mean, it was really tied down to the weather, like you mentioned. And, you know, unfortunately, everything seemed to hit at the wrong time. You mentioned that it was just too wet, and with wet comes disease, and, you know, it really hinders development at the right time. And so it was kind of a perfect storm. You know, it was just one of those years where you try to weather it the best you can, and we did, but we're glad that we didn't have a whole series of those in a row, you know, that this is hopefully kind of a standout year that we get past and go on from.
Professor Babadous, can you explain what diseases particularly are susceptible, what happened last year as we saw rains, what that kind of conditions proved difficult with a couple of different diseases that we saw?
Yes, we do have four major diseases on pumpkins in Illinois. One is just annually what we call powdery mildew. It's not very dangerous, and it comes every year, and we can relatively easily control this disease. We do have this year, we had last year, we have every year, and that's very expected. Another disease, particularly on processing pumpkins, we do have Phytophthora rot or Phytophthora blight. When it comes early in the season, it goes to the vines, it goes to the fruit, and the fruit start developing a spot and very quickly result in fruit rot. Last year we had huge because of the moist condition. Phytophthora blight or Phytophthora rot started early in the season, and some of the field, we had quite a bit losses in the field.
Professor Babadous, why is Illinois such a fertile ground for growing pumpkin? We have a long history of growing pumpkin here?
Yes. We do have two kinds of pumpkins. One is called Halloween pumpkins, or mainly known as jack-o'-lantern.
Right, the ones that you carve.
Yeah, this is
right.
everywhere in the nation, and particularly Illinois even is a leading state in jack-o'-lantern or Halloween pumpkins. But main pumpkins we are famous, Illinois famous of it, is processing pumpkin or canned pumpkin.
And that's a different variety?
Yeah, different variety. Roughly about 90%, accurately 92% of all processing pumpkins are grown and processed in Illinois, meaning that if there is no pumpkin in Illinois, no pumpkin pie, no pumpkin bread. Really?
And do they look different, the two pumpkin?
They do look different.
How do they look? What is the processing? We all know what the jack-o'-lantern looks like, right? What does the processing pumpkin look like?
Processing pumpkins' color is not as orange color as Halloween pumpkins are. And it is like egg-shaped, if I imagine, and it gets a little bit bigger. In contrast, the jack-o'-lantern pumpkins are kind of round. Is a little different. Variety are different, and the color is different. Even sizes are different, too.
Aaron, what do you guys focus on? I imagine you're kind of more in the jack-o'-lantern variety at Curtis Orchard.
We actually tend to specialize on as many different types of pumpkins that we can. We do have the sugar pie pumpkins, which are the traditional ones that you think of when you're going to go out and pick one to make directly into a pumpkin pie yourself. But as far as jack-o'-lanterns go, we have a number of those, but we especially focus on sort of specialty pumpkins, unique ones that you can't get very easily anywhere else. So white, tan, pink, blue. We have a number of different ones that we like to experiment with and give users the reason to trek 10 minutes out to the pumpkin patch and find something other than just a bright orange one, although those do exist and are probably the most common.
Have you found, Aaron, in recent years that people are really interested in different heirloom varieties of things? Do you find that
very much so.
Where have you guys, has it been a challenge for you to find older varieties of pumpkin? Where are you getting those from?
Well, we have a number of different growers or suppliers that supply those, and it's really become more of a niche market. So it really depends on a given year what's available. That's kind of a conversation between my dad and my brother-in-law. They start strategizing with that as far early as January. Where are we going to get them? What did well last year? But as far as a following goes, especially, you've got those people that we warn our patrons, look, if you want that variety, go find it as soon as we open, because, you know, 2 weeks in, we're going to be running out of some of those highly prized varieties, especially the white and the pink ones and the really unique ones that just look kind of strange. The white ones are really popular, especially with weddings, with fall weddings, we found. And as soon as that caught on, we have a very hard time planting enough to meet any sort of demand.
And the white ones and the pink ones, again, these are in the variety of not necessarily the eating variety, right? These are more of the decorative variety.
You can eat them. In fact, very successfully, they will taste good. But, yeah, they're tend to be more sold for decorative.
We're speaking with Aaron Graham. We're talking about Curtis Orchard and Pumpkin Patch. And I wanted to ask Professor Babadous, do we know how many different varieties of pumpkins are grown in Illinois? I mean, Aaron just listed a lot of different heirloom ones. You mentioned the two major differentiating types between pumpkins that are grown for processing with Libby's versus the decorative purposes.
It is not possible to say exactly how many, because it changes. Every year changes. Every year new varieties and new cultivar comes. Roughly, we do have 100 different varieties grown in Illinois.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder, Aaron, if you could give advice for people who are coming to pick pumpkins. What advice do you have for people about if you want to choose the best pumpkin? I guess let's start with decorative pumpkins. What's the best way to determine, okay, this is going to last for a while, or what's your advice for people on that?
Well, obviously, you look for ones that are going to look hardy, appearance. It's very similar to picking out, say, cantaloupe or any sort of produce in the store, where you don't want skin that is soft or shows any marks from insects or anything like that. You also want to wash and dry them right away, fairly close to after you have picked them. There's also a lot of good online advice now that we like to link to, especially on our social media, advising people on how best to preserve the pumpkins. There's a number of different ways to do that, from paraffin to painting them to putting them inside. And those are probably the best routes to go as far as the longest term.
How long should a pumpkin, because is there a rule of thumb? I mean, were you thinking a couple weeks, or how long do you think? Is that too much?
A couple weeks would be on the short side.
Okay.
That would be kind of the one that's going to sit on your porch.
Right.
And probably got some rain on it at some point. They can last successfully inside, this is just based on personal experience, for a good month, maybe two, if you really do your homework and really preserve them well. I've seen them successfully up to 6 months, but that would be on the very, very long side, and you've probably done something special with it.
Oh, okay. And what about for picking pumpkin for, as you said, like sugar pie pumpkin? What about if you're picking pumpkin for processing or for baking? What would you?
For baking, yeah. We actually set those aside. You can find them out in the field as well. But because they are so popular locally, you know, hey, we went out and bought and picked this ourselves, and we're going to process it like they did back in the day. We actually set those aside. They're called sugar pie. They're a very specific size. They're about the size of your head, basically, for lack of a better estimate. And they're high in sugar content, as the name implies, and we also include baking instructions for those. You can also use those and the other heirloom varieties for pumpkin soup, pumpkin bisque, even pumpkin ravioli, which is one of my favorite preparations for it. But typically the sugar pie are going to be for pies and for dessert-type applications.
Evan, when we're thinking about the Morton plant and Libby's, do you all have, I imagine, a couple different varieties of different pumpkin that are going into the canned pumpkin, or you're working with farmers specifically on one variety, like Aaron's been talking about the sugar pie variety?
Yeah, we actually have a proprietary seed, and the majority of canned pumpkin is actually a Dickinson variety. So we are working directly with our farmers, supplying them with our Dickinson seeds. So everything in Libby's comes from our proprietary Dickinson seed.
Okay. And do you have a number of how many pumpkins are going through that plant, or how many cans you guys are producing there?
We produce an awful lot of pumpkin. I'm not able to give you an exact number.
Well, we're thinking it's what you guys have about 200 people working at that plant for 24 hours a day from July through the fall. So
exactly. Well, and to put it in perspective, we do several thousand acres every season. So, and this season we actually will grow double what we grew last year. So this will, if weather holds off for us, will be our largest pack ever. And obviously that's in an effort to get us back into a good inventory position so that consumers can continue to find the product year-round.
Yeah, I wonder, how did you do that last year? From a corporate perspective, how does Libby's prepare for a shortage in crop like last year?
Well, obviously it's very difficult, and it's very difficult for our customers, i.e. our retailers, but it's difficult for our consumers as well. So we do try to manage the best we can in terms of allocating product so that everybody has inventory, but it's certainly a difficult situation. Unfortunately, we went through a similar situation back in 2009 and 2010, where we had another couple of years of a lot of rain, especially early on, and just didn't get the warm temperatures. So we have been through shortages in the past, and so I think we were better prepared, and certainly we hope that this will be the year that we can get enough inventory to get out of it. But we are in an allocation situation this year. As we build inventory, we will be moving that out to our retailers, so consumers will see it across the country, obviously, in the next couple of weeks.
All right. That's Libby's Pumpkin. Thanks to Evan Lundy from Nestle joining us to talk about that. I want to thank Aaron Graham as well with Curtis Orchard and Pumpkin Patch in Savoy. Aaron, so this is around the time of year now. You think everyone should be heading out in the next couple of weeks to get the best selection for pumpkins?
Yeah, our patch opens the 17th of September, and we've been promoting that fairly heavily, and we've been getting that question pretty regularly as well. If you want the best selection, come out the day of or at least that week, and then you'll have the pick of the crop.
I want to thank also Professor Mohamed Babadoust, who teaches plant pathology at the University of Illinois, for giving us a little perspective on the plant side of this as well. Thank you, Professor.
Okay, thank you.
That does it for us today. You can always find past shows on the NPR One app if you search for The 21st. We're also available on iTunes and Android. All of those links and every other way to contact us via phone, email, or social media is at our website at www.21stshow.org. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening.